At Sierra, discover top workout gear at incredible prices, which might lead to another discovery. Your headphones haven't been connected this whole time. Awkward. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans, send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th, and never miss a meme or milestone, all protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Checking off the boxes on your to-do list is a great feeling. And when it comes to checking off coverage, a State Farm agent can help you choose an option that's right for you. Whether you prefer talking in person, on the phone, or using the award-winning app, it's nice knowing you have help finding coverage that best fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. MyLowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Hi, this is Tony Ruggiero here on The Tour Coach. If you're looking to get better at coaching, teaching, or playing the game of golf, you're in the right spot. I'm about to take you behind the scenes, inside the ropes, with all of the people I meet on my journey in the game of golf that are here to shed some experiences and shed some information that's going to help your journey improve and get better. Get ready. Let's go. Let's get better. So joining us here, we've got a special guest today. We've set this up, and I'm always so appreciative of him taking the time to join me. Always generous with his time, and he's been fortunate. I've been fortunate to come on his show a few times. I call him the voice of golf instruction. Michael Breed. Michael, thanks for taking the time, and I know you're busy. We were talking a little bit about that on the off the air, but thanks for taking the time. You're always so generous.
Listen, with you, I'm always going to say yes. I told you that before. I'm always happy to help. And when you're doing what you do, which is trying to help other people understand the golf swing, understand the coaching space a little bit better, there's no place I'd rather be. So thank you.
Well, I wanted to start this off. And anybody listening here on the Golf Coach Development Zoom, feel free to text in a question for Michael or JP or Jackson, jump in. But I had some questions that were sent in. I reached out to some folks. And we got some good questions. And I thought, you know, because Michael, when I think of the qualities and that it takes to be a really good or a great teacher, communication is one of them. The ability to communicate is important. To me, you're one of the most effective. You're a legendary communicator. The way you've done what you've done, and the ability to communicate different things about instruction. So, you know, I always talk about I had mentors. Who were your mentors when it comes to being a great communicator? How did you learn and develop your skills to being a communicator? I talked this morning with some folks of Jim McLean's this morning, and one of the things I talked about was, you know, the ability to communicate is important when developing as a teacher. So I'm curious how you developed the skill and where your role models and mentors were.
So when it comes to communication, I think one of my greatest gifts was I'm dyslexic. And when I was going through school, I didn't really process information the way everybody processed information. And so I struggled with school, and I stumbled upon the gift of dyslexia later in my life when I realized that it wasn't really something that was preventing me from getting somewhere. It was actually something that was enhancing my skill to get somewhere. And I call it my superpower. Hmm. And so one of the arts that I've kind of, I feel like I have an advantage over everybody else because of my dyslexia, one of my sort of core principles in the word communication. Everybody hears communication and they think to themselves, what I'm saying and how it gets digested, right? Mm-hmm. Communication really to me is saying something as easily and as simplistically as you possibly can so that everybody can understand it. And then there was a line that, again, I know you do this, like you read everything, and I do the same thing. I read everything, and it's not just in golf instruction. It's all over the place. And one of the things that I read was about Albert Einstein. And Einstein was asked a question of how he knew he was ready to bring his theories to the world about whatever it is that he was doing. And he said he had a next door neighbor who was 8 years old, a little girl. And he said, when I was able to explain it to her so that she understood it, then I knew I was ready to go to the rest of the population with what I was going to say. And I think the art of communication is not how good it sounds coming out of your mouth. It's how understandable it is in the ears of somebody else. And I think if you take all this and then you put it together with another great mentor that I never met, who didn't live in my lifetime, like literally, Dale Carnegie. Mm-hmm. Dale Carnegie has a thing, if you take any Dale Carnegie classes, which I'm a big fan of, and you can take them online, by the way. Dale Carnegie has a thing called WIIFM, and it's what he calls the WIIFM radio station. And what it stands for is, what's in it for me? And so if you come to every single communication arena, which this would be a communication arena, if you come to every single communication arena with this idea, the individual that you're talking to has an interest. And what is it that they're trying to get? What's in it for me is their mindset. And if you have that mindset of that person's trying to get something, what's in it for me, you have a what's in it for me mindset, looking at it like from where they're coming from, all of a sudden, what comes out of your mouth is much easier digested. So that's sort of my groundworks. And then, again, because I was not a great student, there were a lot of questions that I wanted to ask, but I didn't, because of a situation that happened to me when I was in third grade. I asked a question in front of an all-school auditorium experience. And the person that I asked the question of, the speaker, literally made fun of my question. And I never sat in the front of classes as a result. I never thought I was academically gifted enough to even think of a question and every question that I thought I had, I thought everybody understood it anyway. So I kind of felt like I was taking their time away. And it created a very poor learning arena for me. And so what I decided when I was a coach was, I have this sort of this preamble that I give in all of my, whether I'm talking or teaching, my preamble is, if I ever say anything that you don't understand, that's my fault, not yours. And all you have to do is let me know that you don't understand what I just said, and I'll say it differently, because we both speak languages, and I got to figure out which language you speak. If you speak English, then you'll understand it. If you speak Spanish, I'll speak Spanish. If you speak Portuguese, German, French, I don't care what it is, I'll speak it so you get it. But I need to know when you don't get it. And so my sort of comfort in what I do in my communication is, let them know that if you don't understand what I'm talking about, just let me know. It's not your fault, it's mine. And the second you remove that from them, all of a sudden their mindset is, like, this actually happened this past week. I had a guy who is 74 years of age, and we were having this conversation, and I said to him, right, if I say something that you don't understand, you gotta let me know. And so he didn't understand. And he said, I don't understand. And so I explained it to him. And then what was really cool, what he said to me was, that makes this so much more comfortable.
Right.
And once that happens, the game changes. So I would say, if you really want great communication, you have to have the understanding of communication is not what comes out of your mouth. It's what gets into the ears and the mind and the head of the individuals that you're talking to, and create an atmosphere that is comfortable so that they don't feel embarrassed to ask questions.
Do you think, as golf teachers, you look at going back to where you started with, where an 8-year-old could understand, how do you think we're doing as a profession with that? Do you think, I know you're great at it. I listen to you when I'm driving, you know, and I watch all your stuff. But as you know, sometimes I've heard people say, oh, like they'll say this about me. Oh, he's too simple. Right. It's too simple. Right. How do you think as an industry we're doing in that? I'm not sure everybody embraces that idea in theory. Now, I agree with you 100%. But just curious your thoughts.
So there's a couple of these. I'll tell you a funny story. So a number of years ago, I'm going to say at least 10 years ago, might have been more. I'm doing I'm shooting a commercial down in Orlando, Florida, and David Orr is a part of the, you obviously know David like I do.
Yep.
Now, this is the first time David and I had gotten together. So David and I are having a burger sitting down we're at a club, but we're at the bar of the club. We're not drinking, but we're eating at the bar. And we start talking. And after about 10 minutes, he's asking me a lot of questions and I'm telling him what, and he says to me, "You're a lot smarter than I thought you were." And I said, "Well, I appreciate that. Why do you say that?" And he goes, "Well, when I hear you speak and I hear you present, everything sounds so simple. And I just thought that you just didn't know that much." And I said, "Well, I appreciate that. That's a compliment." And he goes, "Why do you thank me for that?" And I go, "Because that's what I'm trying to do." So this is kind of a long-winded way of telling you how I think we're doing. I think we are doing terribly. And we're doing terribly because we have a real challenge. And the challenge is this. In order for us to be recognized by Golf Digest or Golf Magazine or by anybody, we have to be the smartest person in the room. We have to use fancy words that people don't understand. We have to be able to talk a language that most people can't understand. And by doing that, we think we're doing great because we're spewing out information that people don't have. And if they can't understand me, that's good. And the problem is that less than 8% of the people that play the game of golf are taking golf lessons from us. And so imagine if 8% of the whole population in the world went to a dentist. Would anybody talk to anybody? Everybody's breath would be awful. We'd have cavities and dentures and everything all over the, like, it would be terrible. And so, like, when I sit there and I go, how are we doing as a community of coaches? We're doing terribly. And we're doing terribly because what we're trying to do is convince people that we're the smartest people in the room, and that's how we're going to get recognized. And that recognition is what's going to allow us to, be busier. And the truth of the matter is that people don't understand that the Einstein principle will always be the right way, which is, how can I make it so that everybody can understand me? And so that's what I would say.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Jackson, if we have any questions, let me know. I'm going to ask one more. JP, if you've got anything. Another question that I had was, if you were starting out as an instructor right now, would you change how you've done anything or based on the timing now? And also, like, who would you go watch, and what would be any pitfalls that you would try to avoid, knowing what you know now?
So there's a couple of things. This is a question that we could talk about
forever, right?
Right. Yeah. So one thing is this. Again, these are all these little mottos that I have in my mind. One thing is, don't ask people to invest in you if you can't invest in you. So I have a lot of people who are afraid because they can't afford a launch monitor. And they say, I'd be so much better teacher if I had a Foresight or a TrackMan or a Flight Scope or fill in the blank, right? Mm-hmm. And they argue for these reasons why they can't do that. And I always respond with, don't ask people to invest in you if you can't invest in you. Mm-hmm. I think that is one of the most important things that you can do. To that end, what would I change if I were going to change something? Mm-hmm. The answer to that question is I wouldn't change anything, because every single thing, and you know that, everything leads to this spot. So I have this big belief that no matter where you are, you're right where you're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've had the pleasure of spending time talking to you on ranges all over the country. And inevitably, when I talk to you, I'm going to learn something. When I talk to Butch, I'm going to learn something. When I talk to Sean Foley, I'm going to learn something. When I talk to anybody, I'm going to learn something. And so one of the things that did change in my instructional life, which I wouldn't change this because it taught me a lesson, right? Which I think lessons are really important. So what I like, this other thing, I read a book years ago called Failing Forward by John Maxwell. And it's this idea that failure is actually a necessary ingredient for success. And so I look at my failures as the things that helped me get to where I've gotten to. And so you would think to yourself, well, okay, I'd like to change all my failures. And I'd like all my failures to be successes. But the truth is that the failure is a success. We just call it failure, but it's a success. So I wouldn't change any of that stuff. Now, the one thing that I would caution people to is this. And again, when I teach, when I talk, I try to talk and teach with analogies. And so what I try to tell coaches is, don't just serve steak. Serve steak, serve fish, serve pizza, serve Chinese food, serve Brazilian, serve everything, so that anybody who comes to you can get better. If you want to know how to play golf and you think stack and tilt is the way to do it, even though I might not prefer that, I'm going to understand what they have to say so that I can teach that model and that method. And I think one of the things that I did when I was a young coach was I immediately wrote coaches off. Like, I would go to a seminar and I immediately wrote them off if they weren't talking about the way I viewed a certain something. And then it dawned on me that stack and tilt actually can work. It has worked. People have won with stack and tilt. And people have also won with Jimmy Ballard's philosophy. And there couldn't be two more diametrically opposed concepts than what stack and tilt teaches and what Jimmy Ballard teaches. They are dramatically different, but they both worked. And so what I kind of learned was everybody has something. And what I want to do is I want to steal what you have. Now, I'll credit you, but I want to steal what you've, because you, like me, you've done a lot of research. And some of that research has been in giving lessons. You've asked people to try certain somethings, and you've worked on a certain something with somebody that hasn't worked, and you've worked on that same thing with somebody that has worked. And so all of a sudden you've developed a skill to understand what to give to whom and how to do it. Mark Blackburn and his understanding, and Dave Phillips, like how the body works and what's important about all, like all that stuff is vital. And so why wouldn't I, in talking to you, listen to what you want to try to tell me? Because all that's going to happen for me is I'm going to get better. So that's one of my main things. And then the other thing that I would tell people is this, and this comes from a guy named Scotty Bowman he's still alive, one of the great hockey minds that's ever lived. And I can't even tell you how many different Stanley Cups this guy's been involved with as a general manager, as a coach, as a player, whatever. But it's, I think in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 Stanley Cups. And I had a chance to, in a podcast that I was doing, interview him and ask him what has led to his success. And he said, oh, this is a simple one, curiosity. And I said, okay, what does it mean to you? And he goes, well, I'm just naturally curious. And so what I like to do is I like to listen and not talk. I like to hear what somebody else has to say. I want to try to find out how their stuff works. Because when they start telling me what works for them, I have a chance of trying to figure out why that works and then determine whether or not I want to use that. And that's made me better. And so I think curiosity is an instrumental part of success, because as I have gone through my career and I have looked at how I've kind of been able to do what I've been able to do, I think curiosity has been an important part of this. So I would tell people, like I tell people all the time, be curious, always be curious. The other thing that curiosity does is, and this goes back to a question that you asked me before, curiosity means you don't know everything. Curiosity by definition means you're going to be humble. Curiosity means that you're not going to think you're the smartest person in the room. And as long as you're not the smartest person in the room, you're going to be fine. My dad told me, if you think you're the smartest person in the room, change rooms. And I go to rooms where you're not. Go to rooms where you're the dumbest person in the room, and then you're going to leave there smarter. It makes right. So much sense. So that's one of the other things that I tell young coaches. And then the final thing that I tell everybody, to something that you said at the very beginning, which was you thanked me for doing this with you. And I say to you, I always say yes to you. The truth is I try to say yes to everybody, because what I find is this: yes opens doors and no closes doors. And I want doors to be open. So anytime anybody asks me to do something, I'm pretty much going to try to find a way to say yes. And if I can't say yes, then I don't say no. I would say, is there another time we could do that? Because I am certain that I'm going to get better as a result of saying yes. Opportunities are going to present themselves by saying yes. So what I would tell everybody that ever listens to this is just make a habit of saying yes. And you can't believe what doors are going to open up for you, what opportunities are going to present themselves, and how you're going to end up being in a better spot after you've said yes than before you've been asked the question.
Eczema isn't always obvious, but it's real. And so is the relief from Ebglyss. After an initial dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Searching for real relief? Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILLY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
There's a reason Chevy trucks are known for their dependability, because they show up no matter the weather, push forward no matter the terrain, and deliver. That's why Chevrolet has earned more dependability awards for trucks than any other brand in 2025, according to J.D. Power. Because in every Chevy truck, like every Chevy driver, dependability comes standard. Visit Chevy.com to learn more. Chevrolet received the highest total number of awards among all the trucks in the J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Vehicle Dependability Study. Awards based on 2022 models. Newer models may be shown. Visit jdpower.com/awards for more details. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
Popsicles, sprinklers, a cool breeze. Talk about refreshing. You know what else is refreshing this summer? A brand new phone with Verizon. Yep, get a new phone on any plan with Select Phone Trade-In and My Plan. And lock down a low price for 3 years on any plan with My Plan. This is a deal for everyone, whether you're a new or existing customer. Swing by Verizon today for our best phone deals. 3-year price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate only. Additional terms and conditions apply for all offers.
Doug.
Here we have the Limu Emu in its natural habitat, helping people customize their car insurance and save hundreds with Liberty Mutual. Fascinating. It's accompanied by his natural ally, Doug.
Limu? Is that guy with the binoculars watching us?
Cut the camera. They see us.
Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Liberty, 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 Liberty.
Savings vary. Underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Excludes Massachusetts.
That's awesome. Jackson, JP, you have any questions or anything you want to comment?
No, if I may, Tony, just for a while.
Yes,
I think it's
please.
Great. It's great for the young teachers to hear, you know, a legend really in our industry saying that good communication is a primary, that there's a lot of different ways to do things. And, you know, certainly at any point in your career, but certainly in the early stages of your career, try and say yes to everything. Yeah. You know, Butch always used to say to me, Michael, if you can show up, you got to show up, because, you know, if you don't show up, you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, being on ranges all over the world and trying to get to seminars and doing all of those things alongside of saying yes to any opportunities that might present themselves, I think it's been great advice.
Yeah, I would echo that. And what I would say is that, you know, one of the cool things that happens for those of us that have been in this business for a while, when you go to a seminar, is you're going to hear, invariably, you're going to hear something that you haven't heard before, or somebody's going to say something differently than it's been said before. And then you walk away with another little nugget. As you get better and better and better, you start looking for nuggets, not big, huge boulders. And I think to your point, Justin, I think it's a great one, is when you start putting yourself into these arenas and you get better and better and better at what you're doing, you're really trying to walk away with just a little nugget. Instead of looking like if you think about this game of golf and teaching people, it's very easy to shave 5 shots off of a player who's trying to break 100. And it's easy to shave 5 shots off a player who's trying to break 90. It gets harder to shave 5 shots off a player when they're trying to break 70. And what Tony does, what I've done in my life working with the best players in the world, you're trying to shave a tenth of a shot off of somebody's putting or short game or full swing. That's what we're trying to do. And that tenth of a shot over time leads to a win, or it leads to an improvement. And if you have that philosophy as a young coach, it's how easy is it to get to shave 5 shots when you're trying to break 100? That's like when I went to seminars when I was just getting going, man, I would have reams and reams and reams of notes. And when I started getting better at coaching, my notes were smaller and smaller. And so many times what happens to young coaches is when the notes are smaller, they think they're not getting as much out of it. But what you have to realize is that you've built such a great library of information that there's only nuggets that you're going to get. And then when you get to that point where you're getting only nuggets, that's when you have to start to look outside the box. And so what I do now is I'm trying to get to know coaches like really well who are in hockey and football and baseball. And I'm trying to figure out what those people are doing. I'm trying to read a whole lot of books about how our eyes work, how our toes work, how our ears work, because those are things that are going to enhance my skill. So we had a radio show last week. I had this woman on the show named Dr. Cheryl Calder. She has something called iGym, EYEGYM. She's out of South Africa. Now, I'm in Connecticut. She's in South Africa. I worked hard through some opportunities that were presented to me, but I worked hard to try to figure out how to get her on the show so that I could learn a little bit more about this and create this relationship with somebody that talks to me about how your eyes are vital in decision-making and how you see a line and what goes on with how your eyes work and how you process information. And she, oh, by the way, has worked with Ernie Els and helped him to win a major. And all of a sudden, you guys have never heard of her. And I hadn't heard of her until I heard of her. And then I pursued that. And I think that's one of the other things, like you're going to find these boulders again, because you're getting these small little nuggets, but there's boulders out there. They're just not in golf. Now they're outside of that. Now they're doing things that you might not be familiar with. And what if we find out that one of the most important things that you can do is create toe strength in golfers? Like, what if that becomes a process? Because for a guy like you, Tony, you're a really smart guy. You've done a lot of research on this stuff. Somebody, I start talking to somebody that's like a speed skater or a weightlifter, and they start talking about toe strength. And I'm like, okay, this is new for me. I like new. How's this going to work? Why is it important for my toes to spread? Do my toes come together? What are going on with golf shoes? Are golf shoes like pulling people together? I'll tell you something that was fascinating for me. Talk about nuggets and boulders. So I had this philosophy that I was doing a project with FootJoy. I had this philosophy that the shoe that you wore was a really important thing in putting. Not in full swing, but in putting. And so we ran tests. And sure enough, we found out that there are some people that will putt better when the heel and the toe are at the same height. And there are some people that will putt better if the heel is slightly raised to the toe box. And how that affects. And so now with my players, whenever I give a putting lesson, even indoors, I have them bring 3 pairs of their shoes. Because I want to run them through which shoe is the best for them. When we keep journals, we're keeping journals on how what shoe you're wearing when you putt your best, what shoe you're wearing when you play your best. And then what we do is we figure out, okay, this is the right shoe for you. Not the right company. It doesn't have to be FootJoy, though I prefer it. It just has, you have to understand that the height of the heel is a very important thing for how you perceive a line, how your eyes work. So I marry this iGym stuff up with Dr. Calder, and I put that together with the shoes. And all of a sudden now I've got a whole new world of stuff that I get to kind of go down and find out. And what's the worst thing that I find out? That it makes no difference. Okay. I learned something. So.
Yeah. And, you know, my last point, and then Jackson, if anybody else has anything, though, is to not be a, you know, and I'm going to use, I was talking to somebody the other day about you coming on this, Michael, and somebody was talking about, you know, oh, you know him. And I said, I referred to you as a friend, right? And then somebody said, oh, you're a friend. And I said, here's why I consider you a friend. This was probably, it was a while back, but you called me and you gave me criticism, right? But in a nice way. And you said, hey, I'm just going to tell you something. I watched something that you put out, blah, blah, blah. And then you gave me 4 or 5 points that you said, hey, I'd love what you're trying to do, but this would be more effective and would make you look better. Right. And, you know, I told somebody this story and they were like, you know, they were like a little bit like, well, he gave you criticism. I said, he cared enough to pick up the phone. The guy's on TV, he's doing all this stuff, to pick up the phone to call me for 15 minutes and do that. I was like, well, that guy takes an interest in me and thinks I could be of value and help somebody. And I think that, you know, in this culture of teaching, and it's okay to tell somebody that to help them and give them guidance. And it's also okay to be criticized and have somebody and be open to it, right? And find ways to improve.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I don't necessarily look, and I remember doing that with you, and I did that with, I've done that with a number of golf coaches, and I don't look at it as criticism. Mm-hmm. I look at it as this, and I have shared this with my staffs when I was a head golf coach or head golf pro. I shared with them this, my job, and I know you feel this way, and I'm sure people on this call feel this way. Our job is to leave golf better than we found it. That's the principle behind what we do. We fix ball marks, we rake bunkers, we repair divots, we leave it better than when we found it. And I think it's incumbent upon all of us to want to help other people. Like I can remember when I was younger, my dad asked me what I wanted to do, and I said, I want my life to matter. And the way my life is going to matter is if I can help others. That's the way I looked at it. And so what I try to tell people is the following. When I'm trying to help and I'm telling you, here's what I see, I'm not saying you suck at this. I'm saying, imagine how good you're going to be when you develop this skill, right? So you look at Pat Geeter. Mm-hmm. This guy's got incredible clubhead speed. He's got an amazing gift with what he does in his golf swing. He's 20 years of age, and his short game suffers a little bit.
JP's his coach.
There you go. So his short game suffers a little bit, right? And I'm sure that JP is working on his short game. And everybody's going to be critical of that. So JP's going to say, okay, here's what we need to do to get that a little bit better. Is that a criticism or is that an assist? Because I see it as an assist. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I pick up the phone and I call you, it's you're 100% correct. Your interpretation of that phone call is, this guy gives us, cares yep. about me enough to pick up the phone and say, hey, I love what you're doing, and this is what I think you could do to enhance your skills. And you interpret it the exact right way. And if I know me, I probably said something along the lines of, this is worth what you paid for it. Do with it what you wish. And you know, and I think that's why you and I are friends, you know that my heart is, I want the best for you. And I think one of the reasons, go back to this other question that you asked before. One of the reasons why we struggle as a community is because everybody's in a one-up kind of thing. If you're teaching that guy, it's what you call a zero balance game. If JP's teaching Aldrich, I'm not. Therefore, I'm losing. Therefore, I want to teach Aldrich. Therefore, I've got to go tell Aldrich what a bad job JP's doing. Nobody wins.
Nobody.
I like to pick up a phone and go, hey, you're doing a great job. I love what I'm seeing out of that guy. And I've had this happen with other coaches. I've had coaches who I've reached to and said, hey, I noticed your players hasn't been putting really well. Did you guys, this phone call literally happened with a player a number of years ago. Your player was putting really well for the first 3 months of the year. And they've kind of lost their putting. And this coach said, yeah, and I can't seem to get it back. And my response is, did you change shoes? And they go, well, yeah, they went to Masters and FootJoy came out with a new pair of shoes and they want him in these shoes. And so, yeah, it kind of was around that time. And I go, get him back into the other shoes and he'll putt better. And he did. They put him back in the other shoes and he putted a whole lot better. All we're trying to do is help people be their very best. And I don't need to win by telling other people that Tony can't teach. But so, for some reason, that's what our industry wants to try to do. It's like there's only one pot of gold. Everybody can win. You're winning, JP's winning, I'm winning, and I'm sure a lot of these people that are on this are winning. We can all win. And I think we got to, if our community is going to be really that successful, as I think we can be, we've got to start to embrace the fact that everybody can win. It doesn't just have to be my way or the highway. Your way can work. Their way can work. Her way can work. They can all work.
Michael, that was awesome. It's a hell of a way to end it and wrap it up. Unless anybody, Jackson, anybody have anything?
There are no questions, but is it all right if I ask one?
Yes, of course.
Ms. Breed, is there a difference in your communication when you're talking to a group or doing something on the radio or on TV compared to a one-on-one lesson?
So, yes. So people will basically learn in one of three ways. They're either going to learn through moving their body. They're either going to learn with analytical kind of thoughts or spatial thoughts. So when you're on radio, you can't make assumption that everybody's going to learn one particular way. If I take a spatial learner and give them an analytical thought, it'll fail miserably. What I have found, and through a lot of conversations with many people, what I have found is the best way to teach the most number of people is spatially. So a spatial concept would be, if let's just say you've got somebody that's crossing the line at the top of their swing, right? And they've got a thing going on with their wrist and how their wrist is actually hinging and the forearm is rotating in a certain way. And it's setting the club horizontally at the top. If you told them to, at the top, imagine pouring a water bottle over their trail shoulder, everybody will understand that. If I get analytical, the spatial person won't understand it. The kinesthetic person won't get it. But if I tell somebody to pour water bottle over their trail shoulder, everybody will get it. Now, it might not be applicable to them. It might not be something that's going to help them play better golf, but they'll all get it. And so the answer is, when I'm in a radio type situation or a TV type situation, I will spend the large majority of the time talking spatially, and then I'll chuck in an analytical thought. I can't obviously use a kinesthetic thought because it's hard for me to be able to move a body, but I will do one of those two things. If I'm in a one-on-one, then all of a sudden I can try whatever I need to try. And I have a way of understanding, like I have a series of questions that I ask my players that gives me an idea of which way I think they're going to be most successful. And so I'll start down that path. But I always, believe it or not, I always default to the analytical mind last. So I'll either steer their body or create a spatial thought. And if those two don't work, then I'll go analytical.
Interesting.
I never start analytical first, ever.
Interesting. I think we have one more question to just pop through. Jackson, you want to read it?
What are your thoughts on being fully humble while also maintaining a level of authority and self-belief?
This is such an interesting question. And I think as long as I have been doing this for, I have never been asked this question. So it's great, right? Because there's an assumption that if you're humble, then people aren't going to believe that you're kind of great at what you do, right? And so you want to be confident. You don't want to be arrogant. So what I do is when I start working with a student, I give them two analogies. The first analogy is, let's take Tony. Tony comes to me for a lesson. I'll say to Tony, Tony, here's our deal. You and I are in a boat. You have an oar, I have an oar. If you and I row in the same direction, we're going to get somewhere. If you row in the opposite direction of me, we're not going to get anywhere. And if you stop rowing or I stop rowing, we're not going to get anywhere. We're going to go in a slow circle. And so what we do is based on your ability to believe what I have to say. And so what I need you to do is, if you have a question, ask it. If you disagree with what I have to say, tell me. I'm all for the, I don't think what you just said to me is right. And test me, and I'll put you through this sort of thing, and we'll find out whether or not you agree with what I have to say. Okay. And if you don't agree with what I have to say, that's perfectly fine. I just need to know it. So that's one of the most important parts of this. And then one of the other important things is we all know who Henry Ford was, right? We all do what we do every day. We get to wherever we go every day because Henry Ford had an idea, and it has now turned into some people are driving Fords, some people are driving BMWs, whatever it may be. Henry Ford's smartest thing he ever said was this. He said, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. Okay. So for me, what I tell my students, remember I told you I have a preamble that I do. I say to them, whether you think what I have to say is right or wrong, doesn't matter. But if you think I'm wrong, then you better question me. And if you don't, then even if I'm right, I'm wrong. But if I'm wrong and you believe it to be right, it'll be right, because your mind is vital to the direction that we go in. And so my whole thing is, I'm not necessarily selling them that I'm the brightest guy. I'm selling them on believing that what I'm trying to teach them to do is going to help them get better and hold them accountable for the direction that we go in. And so when I do that, I think I kind of remove this idea that I'm the smartest guy in the world, as much as I challenge them to take responsibility for the directions that we're going in. And I think that kind of gets away from, I don't have to know everything. And that's okay. I'll figure out what we need to do if you believe that what we're doing is right. If that makes any sense. Like,
right.
I want my students to ask questions so that they can believe what they're being taught. The other thing that I think, and you bring up a very interesting point, which is, how do you remain humble, right? Well, being humble to me is, do you really think that you're the most important person on the property? And like, I fall under this heading that there are a lot of people that are doing things that are way more important than what I do. And I start with God. Like, that's an important thing to me, right? And so I teach golf for a living. I didn't get over 400 on my SAT in my English. I got like a 380 in my English. Like, what would I have to pound my chest for? I don't need to pound my chest. I'm not a chest pounder. I'm not the fastest guy. My dad had a line when I was younger, and that is, there's always somebody smarter. There's always somebody dumber. There's always somebody faster. There's always somebody slower. There's always somebody stronger. There's always somebody weaker. You're not the best at anything, and you're not the worst at anything either. And it was kind of like, okay, so all I got to do is do my very best. And if I do my very best in giving a golf lesson, then that'll be good enough. And so I kind of feel like if I work that way, I'm going to be okay.
That's awesome. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time. You're the best.
Thank you, my friend.
I appreciate you and all the friendship and all the help over the years. We'll do this again soon.
I want to say thank you for all the things you're doing. And I can't tell you, like, these things are always fun for me, but you are my friend. And I love the fact that you tell people that we're friends. And I love the fact that you share that story, because to me, that story is, I care enough about you to reach out to you when we don't know each other. I care enough about you. And to that end, I know you'll do the same thing with others, including me. And that's one of the things that I love about our friendship. So I appreciate it tremendously. I hope everybody has a great year. And if for any reason that I can help any of you, you have any questions, my email address is michael@michaelbreed.com. Just send it along. I'm happy to reach out. And I wish everybody nothing but the best. Thank you all.
Michael, you're the best. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, T. Thanks, everybody.